This is Morning Edition. I'm Bob Edwards. Bob Dole today begins a 96-hour marathon, taking his message to Americans nonstop through Election Day on Tuesday. In an attempt to generate enthusiasm and lift the spirits of his struggling campaign, Dole has pledged to go with little sleep over the next 4 days in order to fight, he says, for America's future. NPR national political correspondent Elizabeth Arnold reports.
In the final days of the 1992 campaign, candidate Bill Clinton went 30 hours nonstop. Bob Dole aims to triple that record, announcing a 96-hour marathon campaign trip that begins at noon today. "I'm going to give it all I've got," Dole said when he announced the intended marathon, likening the effort to his service in World War II, when he said he fought round the clock in Italy in 1945.
"Beginning at noon tomorrow, I'll once again fight around the clock for America's future. 96 hours of nonstop campaigning, starting tomorrow noon and ending on Election Day, Tuesday noon."
The 96-hour blitz is an abrupt departure from Dole's moderately paced schedule. It's not clear, however, other than the immediate news appeal, what the campaign hopes to gain, with stops planned, for example, at 1 in the morning in Detroit and 4:30 in the morning in New Jersey. Dole may not be able to articulate his message any more clearly with less sleep, nor is it likely the crowds will get any larger in the middle of the night. But Dole himself says he's been searching the last few weeks for a way to put a focus on the race. "We think we just need a little more spice," he said, minutes before announcing his plans to a crowd in Miami.
"So we're going to be busy and probably sleeping. That's not the important thing. I want to send a message across America that I am totally committed. That I am totally committed to this race. I want to shake up this race the last few days. The polls are starting to close."
Dole has tried to shake up the race more than once with major policy speeches, different slogans, a tax cut plan, the choice of Jack Kemp as his running mate, the Republican convention, and most recently, attacks on his opponent's character. He now brings personalities to his rallies, from quarterback Roger Staubach to actress Bo Derek. Yesterday, however, he was joined by former President George Bush, who clearly empathizes with Dole's current predicament. After complaining about how he left the Clinton administration with a booming economy, Bush quickly shifted to the character issue, which he too raised in the final days of the campaign.
"What matters to me now is the integrity of the White House. I believe in duty, honor, country. I believe in service. I believe in keeping the White House above partisan politics and away from these puny, terrible disputes we're seeing. And I know that Bob and Elizabeth can restore this decency and this respect that I think the American people are craving."
That's what Dole is counting on. "There's still time," he said at a rally in Atlanta, Georgia last night, "and I will not rest my case." Dole has been looking to history, finding comfort in Harry Truman's race against popular challenger Tom Dewey.
"The polls show that he was way ahead, and Harry Truman was a plain-spoken man from the Midwest, but he understood America, he understood the American people, he understood integrity and honor and duty and country. And was all over the American people," said, "wait a minute, we're going to stick with Harry Truman." So the most surprised person in America next Wednesday morning will be Bill Clinton. It'll be Bill Clinton.
Dole begins his 96-hour marathon today, straight through till Election Day. "The signal I want to send," he said, "is that we're determined. Hopefully," he said, his voice trailing off, "people will listen." I'm Elizabeth Arnold in Columbus, Ohio.
President Clinton is expected to respond today to Republican allegations of impropriety about contributions to the Democratic National Committee. The DNC distributes money to the Clinton-Gore campaign, as well as those of other Democrats running for local and national offices across the country. The White House says the president will use a speech in Santa Barbara, California, to reaffirm his commitment to campaign finance reform and to describe what he believes the next president and Congress need to do. Yesterday, the president campaigned in western states, including Arizona, where Democrats usually don't stand a chance. NPR White House correspondent Mara Liasson reports.
President Clinton isn't just trying to win. He's trying to win as big a victory as he can. That's why he campaigned in Arizona, a Republican-leaning state that hasn't voted for a Democratic presidential candidate since 1948. In the home of Barry Goldwater, the president portrayed himself as a real conservative.
"As I stand here in this wonderful state, I know that one of the things most people in Arizona have felt over the years consistently is that we don't need a big bureaucratic government in Washington telling us what to do, and that we do need fiscal responsibility. But I ask you to look at the record on this. Our administration has lowered the size of the federal government by nearly 250,000. It is now as small as it was when John Kennedy was president.
Despite Arizona's history, the Clinton campaign believes there are several factors that give the president a chance to win the state's 8 electoral votes this year. Arizona's economy is the strongest in the nation. There's been an influx of new residents from California that are changing the state's population and its politics. And the Democrats' attempt to paint Republicans as enemies of Medicare has worked with many of Arizona's large population of elderly voters. President Clinton's final march across the country is taking on the air of a farewell tour. The president sounds nostalgic already as he tells voters that he'll never be able to do this again.
I'm about to end my last campaign. I can tell you this. I've been working at this for over 20 years now. Most of the people I've met in both parties, from all points on the political spectrum, have loved our country, have wanted what was best for it, worked hard, and were honest, contrary to the image that is often portrayed.
As the president prepares to end his career as a political candidate, he relives the one moment last year when his political fortunes changed, when he stood up to the Republican Congress and vetoed their budget.
They thought it was so right for America, they shut the government down. And they thought that we were such government lovers, because that's the picture postcard cutout they'd always made of us, that all of us would just sort of cave in and let them have their way. And I told them I'd a lot rather see the American people hurt for 3 weeks than for 30 years. No, thank you. We weren't going to have that budget.
The Clinton campaign has planned a triumphant victory celebration in front of the old State House in Little Rock next Tuesday. The campaign is convinced that nothing will change the dynamic of the race in the next 5 days. But campaign officials are worried about the allegations of improper fundraising practices, allegations that threaten to tarnish what could be a historic victory. Today will be the first time the president speaks about the controversy. Yesterday, White House officials tried to minimize new disclosures about John Wong, the Democratic Party fundraiser who is accused of soliciting improper and possibly illegal donations. It appears that Wong had more contacts with the White House than previously disclosed. Wong was at the White House more than 65 times in the last 9 months. Republicans suggest that he may have promised White House access or government favors in return for campaign donations. Yesterday, Press Secretary Mike McCurry insisted all of Wong's contacts were proper.
He was doing, in short, what those who work for the president are expected to do as they carry out their official duties as administration official during the time he served at the Commerce Department, or when they serve in their political capacity, as he did when he left the Commerce Department and worked for the DNC for the balance of this year.
The law requires a strict separation of fundraising activities from official government business. McCurry said he wasn't aware of any evidence that Wong violated those restrictions. In Oakland, California, with the Clinton campaign, I'm Mara Liasson.
Good morning, I'm Carl Castle with these headlines. Today's Washington Post is reporting that Saudi Arabian officials are holding a man believed to have driven the truck loaded with explosives that destroyed part of a housing complex in Dahran last June, killing 19 Americans. The newspaper also quotes sources as saying there is evidence that implicates both Iran and Syria. Negotiators for General Motors and the United Auto Workers Union plan to meet again today. The two sides met in Detroit for 32 straight hours before recessing last night without a contract agreement. And public health officials in California have closed several beaches around San Francisco because of an oil spill. And those were some of the top stories in the news.
While much of the election coverage focuses on the White House and Congress, voters across the country will determine thousands of other elections next week. Local sheriff, county clerks, school board members. In Bob Dole's home state of Kansas, Christian conservatives are trying to take over the state board of education. Tuesday's results could dramatically change Kansas public schools. But with its former senator running for president and the other U.S. Senate seat open as well, the state school board election largely has been ignored. From Kansas Public Radio, Nick Haynes reports.
At St. Thomas the Apostle Episcopal Church in Overland Park, an affluent suburb of Kansas City, a small group of choir members are practicing their musical selections in preparation for Sunday morning services. Down the corridor from the sanctuary in the church social hall, another group is congregated. They're not here, though, for Bible study. They've come to talk politics with Dick Spears, the president of a local pharmaceutical company who is running as an independent candidate for the Kansas State Board of Education. Ironically, Spears has chosen to preach his message in this house of God, not because he endorses religion's role in politics. On the contrary, Spears says he disagrees with the platform of many Christian conservative candidates.
Many of these people are pushing for mandatory school prayer. Many want to stop sex and drug education. Many of these positions that they have are positions and planks directly out of the Christian coalition. And I'm a Christian too, but I can guarantee you they don't speak for me.
While Spears receives polite applause, he's disappointed with the turnout. Only around a dozen or so have turned up at the church to hear him. As in other states, school board races here don't normally attract much attention. About half a mile from the church, at the Schnucks grocery store, elementary school teacher Susan Vaughn is doing her weekly shopping.
You know, I couldn't even tell you who's running right now for that position. To be honest with you, I didn't even know that that was a race right now, even though I do have children in the school district.
Last August, social conservative candidates swept all five State Board of Education races being contested in the Republican Party primaries. Retired schoolteacher Mary Douglas Brown from Wichita won her primary on a platform of restricting sex education in the classroom. Brown also advocates giving parents tuition vouchers that will provide public funding to send their children to private schools.
I would favor anything that gives competition to the public schools. If the public school is so terrified of competition, there is something basically wrong with the public school system. They shouldn't be the least bit afraid of it.
Brown acknowledges that she owes much of her primary election victory to a group known as Kansas Education Watch, a Christian conservative policy organization that has helped recruit school board candidates and raise money for them. The group's founder, Jim McDavid, is open about his organization's agenda, which he says is to restore Christian values and principles to Kansas classrooms.
You can study everything from Hindu mysticism to conjuring up spirit guides. As long as you don't mention the name of Christ, you're fine. But when you get into Christianity, then that's the no-no. When you get into the Bible, that's the problem. That's what we're experiencing.
McDavid says if conservative candidates win a majority of the seats on the State Board of Education next week, they'll be able to shift the curriculum to include Christian values. In a heavily Republican state like Kansas, where registered Republican voters outnumber Democrats more than 2-1, the conservative candidates have a built-in advantage on Election Day. University of Kansas political scientist Burdette Loomis says that's particularly true in low-visibility races like this one, where the electorate is more inclined to vote along party lines. Loomis says, for the most part, Kansans are still unaware of the Christian conservative agenda.
Of course there are people out there crying that there's a wolf at the door, and there may be a wolf at the door, but until that wolf knocks the door down, until the policies are in place, I don't think you're going to see much of a reaction.
Christian conservatives already control two of the seats on the 10-member Kansas State Board of Education. They need to win just four more on Tuesday to gain a majority. For National Public Radio, this is Nick Haynes reporting.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Jean Cochran. President Clinton is expected to address the issue of campaign finance reform at a rally in Santa Barbara, California today. Aides say he won't be responding directly to the charges of foreigners buying access to the White House with large donations. Instead, they say he'll stress his support for legislation to restrict so-called soft money contributions and to eliminate political action committees. And he's expected to chide the Republicans for failing to pass campaign finance reform. This morning at a rally in Columbus, Ohio, Republican challenger Bob Dole made a preemptive strike.
He looks you in the eyes, he'll do today, he'll make a speech in California, and he'll stand there and he'll talk about campaign finance reform and how he struggled to get it. He struggled to get it, Art, and he got a lot of it. They had these outreach programs, they called it.
The Columbus rally kicks off Dole's final sprint to Election Day. He'll be campaigning virtually nonstop, covering 12 states in the next 4 days. British scientists are reporting new evidence supporting the theory of a primitive form of life that once existed on Mars. NPR's Vicky Quay reports.
When NASA scientists claimed in August that a potato-sized meteorite from Mars revealed traces of an ancient form of bacteria, many scientists were skeptical. Now, British researchers are backing up NASA. At a meeting of the Royal Society, researchers announced they found similar evidence of ancient microbes, and they estimate the ancient life in their meteorite existed as recently as 600,000 years ago. The researchers suggest the microbes in their sample lived in groundwater that seeped through tiny cracks and pores in the rock and might have been thriving until the young meteorite was shot into space. The British researchers say they've studied NASA's meteorite and the two samples contain similar microbe patterns. NASA scientists say the new evidence is pretty strong. I'm Vicky Quay in Washington.
The bond market took off this morning after the employment news and leading indicators from the Conference Board. The Labor Department says payroll jobs rose by 210,000 last month, led by the biggest increase in service sector jobs in 5 months. Analyst Robert Diedrich says this shows the economy is still growing.
210,000 was a good size increase in payroll jobs, a very good size increase, and this despite a decline in government payrolls, which is clearly just a transitory phenomenon. And so all in all, it was a solid month. And the month before, September, having been a month in which employment declined, non-farm payroll employment declined, there had been some questions raised about the vigor of the expansion. I think that this report should put to bed any notion that the expansion is petering out.
Unemployment held steady at 5.2%. On Wall Street, the Dow at this hour is down about 19 points. This is NPR News. The Washington Post reports Saudi Arabia is holding a prime suspect in connection with the deadly truck bombing of a U.S. military housing complex in Tehran last June. Saudi officials are said to believe the man drove the truck that was blown up, and he's one of about 40 suspects being detained in connection with that attack. The Post quotes sources as saying the Saudi government has evidence pointing to Iran as the instigator, and the Saudis believe Syria had advanced knowledge. 19 Americans were killed in the bombing. Israeli authorities today charged a Jewish settler in this week's beating death of an 11-year-old Palestinian boy during a stone-throwing incident. NPR's Eric Weiner has the story from Jerusalem.
According to the indictment, Nahum Kerman chased the Palestinian boy, Hilmi Shusha, who he suspected of throwing stones at Jewish settlers. Then, according to the court document, Kerman beat the boy with the butt of his pistol and kicked him in the head. Kerman, who is security chief of a nearby Jewish settlement, denies killing the boy, who he claims fell and hit his head on a rock. The incident has led to increased tensions between Palestinian residents of the West Bank and Jewish settlers who also live there. After the boy's funeral on Tuesday, Israeli soldiers clashed with angry Palestinian residents. Israeli prosecutors say they plan on calling more than a dozen witnesses in the case. If convicted of the manslaughter charges, Kerman faces up to 20 years in jail. This is Eric Weiner in Jerusalem.
Cardinal Joseph Bernardin has relinquished day-to-day control of the Chicago Archdiocese. The Roman Catholic leader is fighting pain and fatigue, the result of terminal pancreatic cancer. The disease has now spread to his liver, and he's been given less than a year to live. Bernardin is 68 and the nation's senior active Catholic cardinal. For now, an aide will take over responsibilities. Another economic figure, factory orders, rebounded in September, 2.7%, the largest increase in nearly 4 years. I'm Gene Cochran, NPR News in Washington.
This is Morning Edition. I'm Bob Edwards. As the election campaign draws to a close, there is great interest in which party will control the U.S. House of Representatives next year. If the Democrats post a net gain of 18 more seats, they will have a majority. A key is the state of Washington. Of the 9 seats being contested there, 6 are held by freshman Republicans, and 3 of those first-term incumbents are in close races. NPR's Wendy Kaufman reports that a difference of just a few thousand votes in Washington could determine control of the House of Representatives.
1994 was a very good year for Republicans running for Congress in Washington State. The state had the biggest party switch of any delegation in the country, moving from 8 Democrats and 1 Republican to 7 Republicans and 2 Democrats. Today, at least 3 of those freshman Republicans are in very tough races, among them Linda Smith, who championed campaign finance reform and who is one of the best-known members of the Republican class of 1994.
Yeah. Have we met before? Okay, good to meet you. I think I've met this gentleman before, right, but I haven't met you before.
4 months ago, no one thought Linda Smith was politically vulnerable. But in September, she won the primary by only 5 percentage points. Today, Linda Smith is running hard in her district in the southwest corner of the state. At a recent fundraiser in Olympia, the Congresswoman told her audience that she is the Republican the Democrats love to hate the most. Beyond that, she says, her seat is definitely in play.
This race is one of the 18 or so that they want to move to the Democrat side. Not so much for any other reason than they want to take control of Congress. But I'll tell you, if we go back to the old ways in Congress, they're going to unravel welfare reform. They've stated as much. Well, if we don't have reform of entitlements, we will never balance the budget. And if we don't balance the budget, my 6 little grandchildren don't have much of a future.
Ever passionate, often feisty, Smith was one of the first candidates to put her signature on the contract with America, and she remains one of its staunchest advocates. Though Democrats abhorred her politics, it wasn't until her tepid showing in the primary that the Democrats started to pour money and effort into the race. That, Smith told her Olympia supporters, has put the pressure on.
It absolutely is important that we buy more radio tomorrow in one of the counties, because we have started to slip in one county we shouldn't, but there's just a pounding of negative ads. We're still ahead, and we are ahead probably enough that even if he erodes us some more, we're okay. But I don't know that. I was substantially ahead 2 months ago.
I'm running because for the past 2 years, I've seen the Newt Gingrich and Linda Smiths of Congress try to pass some of the most extreme, unfair, and unequal legislation we've seen in this country in decades.
Democratic challenger Brian Baird.
When that was blocked, they let less severe legislation go through, and now are trying to take credit for the less severe measures. But we have to hold their feet to the fire and say, had you had your way, this is what the situation would be. In the case of education, they tried to cut $10 billion from student loan programs. They tried to cut education from Head Start right on up through college.
Baird, a practicing psychologist and university professor, rattles off objections to Republican initiatives in education, health care, the environment, and tax policy. Though he acknowledges that he's had no real political experience, he says he's worked in the areas that people often worry about the most, education and health care.
In the case of health care, I teach healthcare policy, and I teach ways of reducing costs and different models of that. And I've worked in the field. It's not just an academic exercise for me. I sit by patients while they die because they didn't have health insurance. I deal with insurance companies as they tell my patients they can't get the treatment they need. Those are the kind of experiences that I think most people in Congress really don't understand on the real world level. They may think about it in abstract, but I've lived it in the real world.
For Linda Smith to hold off Brian Baird's challenge in this district, which usually supports Democrats, Smith will have to reach beyond Republican voters. Indeed, Republicans like state GOP official Todd Myers hope to persuade some Clinton voters they need a conservative Congress.
Those people are people who will go to the polls and say, all right, I'm going to vote for Bill Clinton, but I don't want him running amok. I need a Republican in Congress to make sure that he doesn't get out of hand again. Clinton has no coattails. He may win this state for president, although I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. But even if he does, that is no guarantee that these Democrats in Congress will win. And it may, in fact, be a guarantee that some people cross over.
To keep Democratic voters from straying and to boost turnout in Washington state, the Democrats this week dispatched Vice President Al Gore.
When I talk about the importance of turnout and the enthusiasm from you that is essential to producing that turnout, I want you to keep fresh in your minds what happened after the Republicans gained control 2 years ago.
Gore stumped first in Spokane. There, Democrat Judy Olson, a fourth-generation wheat farmer and president of the National Association of Wheat Growers, is making an unexpectedly strong run at George Nethercutt, the man who beat Speaker of the House Tom Foley in 1994. From Spokane, Gore moved on to Seattle, where Democrats hoped to knock off two freshman Republicans in suburban districts. Gore wasted no time going after Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. Gore referred to an alleged statement by the Speaker that he would resign from Congress if Democrats gained control. Gingrich maintains he said only that he would resign from his leadership post, but Gore couldn't pass up a chance to take a dig at Gingrich.
Washington State, more than any other state among all 50, has the chance to call Newt Gingrich's bluff and to say, okay, we're going to elect Democrats to the House of Representatives and change the Congress for the better, to have it for working families for a change. Now,
one of the suburban Democrats Gore was trying to boost was Jeff Cooper Smith.
Hi, how are you?
How are you?
Great, thanks. Nice to meet you, Chris. How are you? Hi, Jeff Cooper Smith. Nice to see you.
Cooper Smith was a prosecutor who most recently worked for the Chamber of Commerce. He's battling incumbent Rick White, a former corporate lawyer with a Boy Scout image.
Norma, how are you?
Fine, thanks. I recognize you from television.
Rick White, very nice to see you.
Thank you.
This district, home to Microsoft, is affluent, environmentally conscious, and relatively conservative on fiscal matters. The biggest influence on the race so far has been the relentless attack labor has made on Rick White. White counters that real political reform doesn't come easy.
When I first ran for office 2 years ago, people said it was impossible to solve some of the problems our country has because in our political system, no politician would be crazy enough to deal with some of these entitlement programs or take these other votes. We've now taken those votes. I'm proud of that. But if we don't reelect the people who took those votes, we will have proved that the conventional wisdom was right back then, and it'll be 25 years before anybody takes those votes again. You know, we can't wait that long to solve these problems, and that's why I think this is such an important election.
White won this district in 1994 by about 6,000 votes out of 195,000 votes that were cast. The fourth race in contention in Washington State pits Randy Tate, the youngest GOP lawmaker in Congress, against Democratic State Senator Adam Smith. This is a blue-collar district that Tate won only narrowly in 1994. Again, the AFL-CIO has weighed in heavily against the Republican incumbent. Democrat Smith actually beat Tate in the primary. The margin of victory in each of these congressional races could well be just a few thousand votes. And here, labor's expenditures and the active campaigning of Clinton and Gore have buoyed Democratic hopes. As for the Republicans, Bob Dole hasn't campaigned here at all, though the National Republican Party has spent substantial money here. In the end, turnout will be the decisive factor, and both parties are battling apathy. In Seattle, this is Wendy Kaufman reporting.